In today's OnClub episode, we spoke with Rami Sedholm, MD, Ryan Chow, MD, and Ronak Batami, MD, MSCE, about a pragmatic real-world question in advanced urothelial carcinoma. Can upfront dose reduction of enfortumab vedotin improve tolerability, particularly neuropathy, and treatment interruption without compromising clinical outcomes in patients with bladder cancer? In our exclusive interview, the group reviewed the clinical rationale for evaluating proactive dose modification with enfortumab vedotin, discussed the design of a retrospective Flatiron Health cohort analysis, and outlined how physiologic vulnerability was defined using age, renal function, and performance status. The panel then summarized key findings from this study that suggested the possibility of fewer treatment interruptions with upfront dose reduction and no apparent difference in overall survival versus with standard dosing, including in vulnerable patient subgroups.
Talking about the rationale, what specific real-world observations regarding EV-related neuropathy and treatment discontinuation led you to prioritize investigating upfront dose reduction over reactive dose modification in this study?
You know, in our experience, EV is an incredible drug, very active in urothelial cancer. But the problem is we're really seeing our patients develop this terrible neuropathy. It can really impact their quality of life. You know, we have patients who can't brush their teeth, they can't button their shirt. And the way we've been managing this neuropathy is we do like a treatment break, we hold treatment for a few weeks, and we'll restart EV at a lower dose. But I think what's really worrisome for us is that in a lot of our patients, and the FDA estimates almost 90% of these patients, if they do develop a neuropathy, it's permanent or only mildly improves after you hold the drug. And so, you know, for context, this is not like a rare issue for patients on this drug. Like in the phase 3 EV-302 trial, over half of the patients got neuropathy. A third of the patients had to stop the drug altogether. And yet, I think what's really striking is that even with all these treatment interruptions, dose modifications, the outcomes with this drug was still so remarkable and still so impressive compared to what we used to do. And so that really raised this question of, do we really need to put our patients at risk of this, you know, potentially life-altering, potentially permanent toxicity from EV if we start everyone at this full dose? So let's say, just going into the study, we were wondering, if we started patients at a lower dose, how does that impact their survival outcomes and their ability to stay on treatment long term, which would potentially be a different way of how of treating these patients than how we currently do?
Yeah, absolutely. Makes a lot of logical sense and leads very nicely into the next question, as you said. So getting into the study design and the patients involved, briefly, what is most important to know about the way that the study was designed and the patient population that was included? And more specifically, how did you define a physiologically vulnerable population?
So this was a retrospective real-world cohort study of patients that had advanced urothelial cancer, all of whom was started first-line EVP, just like you'd expect. We used a large data set and as sort of a nationwide electronic health record derived data set called Flatiron Health. And there are really three key features of the cohort. So number one, it reflects routine clinical practice. And that's important. So that means that, you know, we included patients treated both in the community and in academic settings. And we did not restrict to clinical trial eligible populations. Second key feature is we looked at, as Ryan alluded to, we looked at upfront EV dose reduction, and that was defined as EV dosed at 1 mg per kg or 0.75 mg per kg for either of their first two doses to get into that cohort. And this was compared to standard dosing at 1.25 mg per kg for both of the first two doses. And, you know, we were really thoughtful about this definition because it captures a real-world strategy. And this is what many clinicians already use, you know, starting at a lower EV dose in patients that they think are at higher risk for toxicity. And that gets into the second part of your question, how do we define, you know, physiologic vulnerability? And so we used what we think is a pragmatic definition of vulnerability. And so that was age 85 years or older, creatinine clearance of less than 30, and performance status of 2 or higher. And you know, we think that these factors like influence tolerability in the clinic. And I'll just say one last thing about the design that, you know, was really led by Brian Chow is that, you know, because these dose reductions aren't randomized in practice, we used a propensity score based technique called inverse probability of treatment weighting. And that allowed us to balance the groups and sort of compare our primary endpoint of interruption-free survival, which is a real-world measure of treatment tolerability.
Speaking of results, let's get into the nitty-gritty there. So what did these real-world data show about the impact of upfront EV dose reduction on the risk of treatment interruption and overall survival outcomes?
So I think the first thing to mention is we're finding in real-world practice, as Ron was saying, 1 in 4 of patients are already starting at this upfront dose reduction with EV. I mean, so with that in mind, we're finding that when we account for, you know, other confounding variables, it looks like upfront EV dose reduction really cuts the risk of a treatment interruption about half. And then overall survival was not significantly different between patients who started at the full dose compared to who were started at a lower dose. And what we found really striking is this effect was very much consistent when we did a subgroup analysis of these patients who have physiologic vulnerabilities, as Ron was describing. Again, we're cutting the risk of treatment interruption in half, and the survival outcomes are pretty similar. I think the theme to mention is we're using treatment interruption here as a surrogate for toxicity. The idea being, you know, how we practice is if patients are experiencing some sort of toxicity from the drug, then we're holding the treatment for a few weeks and trying to help them recover from that before we restart it. And so the idea here is that upfront EV dose reduction might be helping patients tolerate treatment better, and it's not compromising the efficacy of the drug, which is really important.
Awesome. Really appreciate going through that results. So very, very exciting things too. And I think as we'll get into, certainly some implications for our sort of current understanding of dose intensity. So thinking about the impact of these findings, how do they challenge the traditional oncology paradigm that dose intensity is synonymous with clinical benefit, particularly since, you know, the data showed no difference in OS, significant difference between the standard and reduced dose cohorts?
Yes, for decades, oncology has been guided by dose intensity as a paradigm. And it's really around the idea that giving the highest tolerated dose as early as possible is synonymous with benefit. And this framework historically really came from the cytotoxic era of chemotherapy. And it's important to point out that typically on these trials, patients are younger, patients are fitter. And what our findings highlight is in modern day oncology, with enhancements in drug delivery and drug development, this assumption may not universally translate in modern practice. And I think particularly in our cohort of older adults and patients with physiologic vulnerability, which can be younger patients too. So what we found is that preserving treatment continuity may be just as important, if not more important than starting at the max labeled dose upfront. A modest upfront dose reduction did, as Ryan mentioned, reduce early toxicity. It lowered the likelihood of treatment interruptions, and it did allow patients to remain on effective therapy longer. Practically in the clinic, when I'm meeting with patients, we're often having conversations about what's most important to you. And I would say a pretty standard answer is that people want to gain as much benefit from drug and live as long as possible, but often not at the compromise of quality of life. And what's nice is we were able to show that with upfront dose reductions, you can hopefully achieve both. And I think this reframes how we might think about just the term intensity. So rather than really focusing solely on the number of milligrams given upfront, we should really be thinking about how can we maximize the delivered therapy over time. You know, what patients receive, tolerate, and I think we're adding the word sustain. So more broadly, I think this shift is aligning with a nice shift, which is about how can we personalize treatments for patients beyond tumor biology. So precision medicine has really been focused heavily on molecular targets, But I think precision care can be, how do we make alterations based on patient physiology, patient functional reserve, and ultimately patient goals, which of course we are not able to ascertain from this data set, but I think practically it's something that we could translate into clinic when we're meeting with patients, thinking about this data that we were able to bring to fruition.
These data are very exciting and interesting, but there are always some limitations and some lessons that can be learned. So it was noted that the data set lacked information on metastatic disease sites and tumor burden. In your clinical experience, how might these specific variables influence a physician's decision to utilize an upfront dose reduction, and could their absence have led to residual confounding in the survival analysis?
Yeah, this definitely came up in peer review, which is obviously important to strengthen the paper that everyone just read. But we thought about this, and we sort of, concluded that disease burden is so unique that it's actually bidirectional. So patients with high disease burden who are super symptomatic, right, that we see in clinic, they actually may be more likely to receive full dose. Disease burden, though, can also go in the opposite direction. So patients with extensive disease are oftentimes more fragile because they have like organ dysfunction or poor functional status because of their disease. And this could push clinicians the other way toward dose reduction. So the net sort of direction of confounding is, it's not always straightforward in pharmacoepidemiology, but I think importantly, we didn't observe a detrimental effect on survival with dose reduction. And that was very reassuring to us. But to your point, regardless, I think all of these results should be interpreted as, associations and not causal. And I think they just reinforce the need for prospective studies.
Absolutely. Appreciate the clarification as always. And speaking of prospective studies, that brings us to next steps. So since the follow-up time for the EV Pembro regimen was relatively short due to its relatively recent approval, what specific prospective data or longitudinal outcomes are most critical to validate these findings before something like upfront dose reduction can be formally integrated into treatment guidelines?
Yeah, it's a really great question. I think traditionally, sort of the burden of proof has been to show non-inferiority when you're trying to look at treatment de-escalation in a randomized trial. Is like, that's our gold standard. But these types of trials are really hard to execute, right? The industry is not interested in funding these. You need really large sample sizes to demonstrate non-inferiority. And patients and clinicians are worried that the treatment won't be as effective if you're reducing it. So I think there is a growing tide in the field, though, that maybe the burden of proof actually should be for oncologists to show that giving more treatment is actually superior to doing less treatment, especially for a drug like EV, which we're seeing can have a real risk of permanent toxicity. And there are some precedents now for designing sort of a superiority trial for treatment de-escalation. There was a phase 3 trial called SONIA. It was looking at CDK4/6 inhibitors in breast cancer. They were trying to compare, do you actually need to give these drugs in the first line, or can you give it safely in the second line without affecting survival? And they showed that it was fine to wait until later to give this drug. And so these kinds of creative studies that use a superiority design might actually be a meaningful path forward to try to look at, is it safe to do EV at an early dose reduction compared to what we normally do now? I think the other element about our study that I think would be really interesting to look at prospectively is, as Rami was saying, was looking at these treatment-related quality of life outcomes, how patients experience treatment, and what their journey is like when they're on this treatment. I think looking at toxicity profiles in a prospective fashion, looking at quality of life, comparing between upfront dose reduction versus our full dose, I think that would be really informative. One could argue there might be a route forward for looking at multiple endpoints at the same time. So things like not just looking at survival, but also looking at how patients get through treatment in terms of quality of life and toxicity. And, patients don't want to just live longer, right? They also want to live better, and quality of life, toxicity, all of those things should also be accounted for, I would argue, especially for patients with metastatic disease. Yeah.
I see a lot of older patients as an oncologist out in the community. And I think a reality is those patients in clinic often look different than those enrolled on trials. And while we are doing everything we can to improve equitable representation for those on trials, studies like this are really important to mend the data gap, because there is a reality of both over and under treatment. And this is, I think, the real value of real world evidence, is that we could try to answer some questions. And it just makes conversations in the clinic more informative to share that we were able to look at real world usage and show that when an oncologist says, I don't think reducing your dose up front will lead to lower survival and it may actually improve your quality of life, can be meaningful for patients, especially savvy patients who are able to look into the literature. So I think maybe a call for researchers and for, you know, rising young stars like Ryan, that this data can be very, very meaningful for oncologists in the field.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.